Hey, everybody. Neil Rosen here from New York One and Time Warner Cable. Welcome to episode 2 of our podcast, Sitting Around Talking Movies. We're here with Bill McCuddy, as we were last week.
Hi.
And we're here with Bill Bregoli.
Hello there.
And what are we doing here? Well,
We're sitting around and we're talking movies.
We're still talking movies. We do a television show on New York One and Time Warner Cable nationally called Talking Pictures, where we talk about the latest stuff that's in theaters. But more importantly, there's like 300 movies that are in your cable box that are available on demand. And other than, you know, Trainwreck or Twilight or Harry Potter, you probably didn't hear – you probably never heard of like 80%, 90% of these titles. So we kind of sift through this stuff and tell you what's worth looking at and what's not worth looking at.
One of them this week has women just sitting around with no tops on.
That's true.
So that's called a tease in the business,
yeah,
right?
So we'll get to that one in a minute. Bill McCuddy is actually sick, and we're all sitting in a small little room here. So that's just one.
So soon everyone will be.
Yeah, well, at least Bill Bregoli and I are might be getting. You're gonna ruin the rest of the summer, Bill.
I like your surgical masks, though, guys. You look good. You look very good.
There you go.
And this, by way of a visual, Bill McCuddy is actually looking into a wall, facing
right,
away from.
Right, because we don't want to get sick.
Myself.
He's actually.
I'm like in detention.
Yeah.
Which I'm very familiar with from high school.
102 fever this guy had last night. But all right, so let's.
But I'm here for you, the people.
That's right. Okay, so we're gonna start out with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Now, you remember The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? I know. Did you watch Bill The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
I was old enough. I actually had a Man from U.N.C.L.E. toy.
Did you?
As a kid.
What was your toy?
It was called a six finger, and it looked like a finger, but it was really a gun or whatever. And you slid it into your hand, so it looked like you had six fingers. But
oh my God, I think I had that.
Yeah, I had a secret.
I had
little
The Man
trigger.
From U.N.C.L.E. lunchbox. And it came in with the. Remember the old? They were like these rectangular tin lunch boxes, and then the thermos inside also had the some kind of scene from whatever it was. I had The Man from U.N.C.L.E. lunchbox.
God, we're old.
But six finger. So the six finger was a gun.
Yeah, it was a gun, or it fired a little dart back before.
Yeah.
Back when you can have toys that fire guns.
You watched the show, didn't you, McCuddy?
Yeah, I did. And actually, I think the movie is kind of a disappointment for people that watched the show because Robert Vaughn is Napoleon Solo and Henry Cavill is not. I mean, he's sliding in and trying to be cool and funny, but I think a different actor would have had a better time. That said, there's so little out there this summer except for Mission Impossible that I actually kind of liked this movie by the time it was over.
For August, this is actually good.
Yeah.
This is when movies go to die.
Well, I remember last week, Bregoli was telling me, you were saying, before I had seen the movie, you saw it, and you said, I said, how is it? And you said, it's pretty good. And you liked it.
Yeah, I had a good time with it. I liked the women were really fun in it. The way they're dressed is kind of cool from the 1960s. There's some great 1960s cars. If you're a gearhead like me, there's a Ferrari just sitting around looking beautiful.
Well, the fact that it's set in the 60s at the height of the Cold War and, I think that they get the costumes and the sets and all that stuff right. But I did not like the movie at all. I mean, first of all, Henry Cavill. This guy is like a piece of lead. I mean, he has no charisma. They're trying to make him into like a, 007 James Bond guy. And the guy has no personality, no charisma. And, I had the same problem with this guy as Superman. When he played Superman, I thought he was like the least charismatic of all the Supermans. And, he was interviewed recently saying that, like, he never watched The Man from U.N.C.L.E. TV series. And he never watched Superman or wasn't really familiar with Superman before he took that role. Maybe that's why he sucked. Because I thought
he's really
was,
bad at research.
Yeah, he's not good. I thought Armie Hammer.
Did he know your name during the interview?
I didn't do the interview.
Oh, okay.
I said
so
I,
at least
I watched an interview. Right. But I thought Armie Hammer as the Russian spy Ilya Kuryakin fared better, but not that much better. If you saw this movie Ex Machina. Alicia Vikander is in there. They tried to make her look like Audrey Hepburn. She was okay. But the whole thing was very, I thought it got a little better towards the end. I mean,
the end definitely saves it. And, they're trying to build a franchise here. Let's take a vote. Is this going
to
be a franchise?
I wonder.
I don't know. I don't
Depends
know.
On how many
it's so funny to watch Hugh Grant in the old Leo G. Carroll part because 10 years ago, Hugh Grant would have been Napoleon Solo. And now he's been relegated to this little smaller part, like Nick Fury. I think that
Hugh Grant's in it for like 10 minutes.
I know, but they're setting him up because they think this is going to be a franchise to be the guy that's going to always give them the assignments. And so here's what I think should happen. I think if they keep these two guys, and I think they have to, And this thing makes enough money to justify a franchise. Get Quentin Tarantino in here. The Quentin Tarantino always wanted to make a James Bond movie. This is trying to be a Bond franchise set in the 60s. And Tarantino would have some fun with these guys.
Well, that I'd like to see. But right now, I was bored. They strapped Cavill to an electric chair. You know,
that was funny, actually.
Yeah, say it's like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, no. That was like one of the few scenes. But there's this woman, this ice princess woman,
Elizabeth
DeBakey.
Yeah,
yeah, she was like kind of like a cartoon character.
In the words of the late Bob Hope,
this movie didn't do it for me. I wonder how it's going to do with audiences. It certainly didn't have the fun of the TV show. I remember the TV show. They used to walk into a tailor shop. And behind the curtain, there was this huge, it was like Mission Control. It was the whole headquarters for Uncle. And here, the whole thing was kind of just.
They do a great take off that in Archer, by the way, which is one of the best shows on television.
Well, I don't know. Before we move off Man from Uncle, I agree with you, Bregoli. It's going to be on. Depends how it does at the box office.
Yeah, it's going to get an older crowd because everyone else is going to the movie we're talking about next week, which will be Straight Outta Compton. That's going to get the kids.
Well, talk about movies that have. We don't know whether it's. Well, before I get on to this next thing, Bill McCuddy, you think it's going to do okay? You think it's going to do well? You think it's going to?
I think it gets anywhere near 150 million worldwide or 200 million, that they're going to keep making them. And as I said, they should bring somebody besides Guy Ritchie, who we didn't mention. And I normally like, although the Sherlock Holmes films are not my favorites, but he generally knows how to reboot something. But I think he kind of went a little flat here, and I'd like to see.
I don't know if – I've never seen Tarantino step into like something where like
– Well, he wanted to do a Bond film.
No,
was famous
we'll
for it. He begged them. He wanted to be black and white and really cool. He had all these great ideas. So I think this is maybe his chance.
Well, we'll see how Man from U.N.C.L.E. does at the box office, and I agree with Bregoli. If it does well – they obviously will make a sequel. I don't think it's going to do well, and I didn't like the film. But talk about movies that didn't do well. Last week, Fantastic Four opened, and it was actually predicted not to do well. Like, the buzz before it even opened. I don't know how they know this.
9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like, in Hollywood Reporter, before it opened, going like, nobody has any. I guess nobody has
any. They track it. It's called tracking.
Yeah, they
knew the movie was going to tank.
Yeah.
And it did tank, and they've already. Before it opened, like 6 months ago, they signed everybody up to do a Miles Teller and all the whole cast to sign on for a sequel. And I don't know. I can't imagine them making a sequel now. I mean, do you think they'll make a sequel to?
If they do it, it will be for business considerations because of Marvel Comics. They could lose. Now, all the Marvel movies are being made by Disney now, except the Fantastic Four, pretty much. They could lose that franchise and have Disney make
But Fantastic Four has always, and it's funny, it's the signature comic of Marvel Comics, and it does the worst at the box office. Like the last series that they did with Checklist, and I mean that
Jessica
that,
Alba is the only thing anybody remembers from the first one, which was a disaster.
But there were
and
a
when
couple
Jessica
of them.
Alba is the high point, when she's the cream of the crap, you know you're in trouble.
Well, Fantastic Four, It tanked. Nobody went to see it, really.
It was a troubled production, too.
And here's what's really weird. It didn't do well internationally. And normally these movies, if they just have to be watched and not paid attention to, as long as the action is decent, they do well overseas. But it opened really poorly around the world in the markets that it opened in. So
what do you think that is, McCuddy? What do you think that people didn't want to see?
It was a bad movie. What do you mean what
was
wrong? There's
a lot of bad movies.
I know, but...
These superhero movies just seem to... Even Green Lantern made more money. I mean, you know, that was a bad, or that one Daredevil with Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck,
that's
yeah.
a bad movie. But
without his
nanny. Fantastic Four. There is a loyal, much more of a loyal following than Daredevil or Green Lantern.
I think the market for it. I think the audience. I think the audience for it has been disappointed before. They were weary this time. They had their guns out, ready to not like it, and I think they were. I think they were given what they were asking for. I also think Miles Teller's having a bad week. You know, he had that article in Esquire where they called him a dick, and he's been having, he's got that walk and that swagger that Shia LaBeouf had, and he's ready for a takedown. And so I think I didn't see anybody on the marquee in this movie that I said, oh, I have to go see this film. And I haven't seen it yet. I don't know about you guys. I haven't seen it.
Oh, I saw it. You know what? There's some of the worst green screen work you'll ever see. It really looks like some local TV station, and the guy wore green by mistake.
It's funny what you say about Miles Teller getting that bad press, because before he was a movie star and he was just acting in little things, the word, you know, I think he went to some private schools in New York, and having a kid that is in that world and knowing some of her friends, the word on him was that he wasn't that great of a guy when he was just starting out his career, before he was a star, that he was like, oh, you know, like your kid comes home and tells you.
Well, that served him really well in Whiplash. And I'm not making a joke. I mean, I think that if he had that to draw upon, it really helped that performance.
Yeah. Well, I think that he's great in Whiplash. I love him as an actor, and I loved him in The Spectacular Now, a great movie with what's that actor?
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, Shailene Woodley. I love that movie, and if you haven't
But every time he steps up into some kind of a big – this is the grooming process in Hollywood, obviously. I don't have to tell you. Like, you come out of independence. If you're reasonably good-looking and you can carry a movie, you get plugged into bigger things. That's what happened to Leonardo DiCaprio. It's what's happened. And actually, this guy, Miles Teller, does look kind of like a young – like Robert Mitchum. The problem is the Divergent series and now this Fantastic Four are dead on arrival. And so he's going to – either have to go back to smaller movies or have a real big hit real fast.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you place all the blame on Fantastic Four on Miles Teller. I don't think because Fantastic Four bombed at the box office. I don't know if you'd agree, Bregoli, but, you know, it's
it
like,
doesn't
okay,
help.
Miles
it doesn't
Teller
help.
Will now
–
well,
help.
Look, Taylor Kitsch, if you ever saw the TV show Friday Night Lights, he played Tim Riggins. You know, and they put him in a couple of movies, and then they put him in like one of the biggest Disney bombs of all time. What is the name of that?
John Carter, you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And now I see that he's cropping up, and he just did Jimmy Fallon this week. You know, he's cropping up and stuff. So,
careers get resurrected all the time, but like I'm just saying that up to this point, Teller has been in some really great little movies and no great big movies.
So, what are they saying about Teller? Why are they calling him like a?
Well,
like
he
a
had
jerk?
A long talk with this. He hasn't learned. Like Shia did, that you can't tell that journalists aren't your friend. You know, this woman from Esquire interviewed him. He thought it was going well. He was kind of being funny with the waiter and waitress, and you know, he just hadn't learned that you can't assume that people who are doing stories on you are going to say nice things about you. So she kind of deduced that he was kind of a dick. Now, if you read the piece, he's kind of funny and cool in it, I thought. I didn't find him coming off that way.
You remember that scene in the movie Lenny with Dustin Hoffman where somebody from Time magazine, it's either Time or Newsweek, comes in to interview Lenny backstage, and he's like, and the guy's the journalist is really nice to me. He's oh, I love your act. You're really great, you know. And then the article comes out, it's scathing, like horrendous things. So I don't know.
You know what? We should tell people about what the interview process is like when you get 10 minutes sitting down with somebody.
Well, you get 10 because you do radio.
Yeah,
I get 4 minutes on a junket interview, which or Bill McCuddy doing a red carpet. I mean, you know, it's like it's 4 minutes. I mean, I'm doing this for 20 years. I've learned the art of how to basically, you know, get the information in 4 minutes. I mean, I let them fulfill their agenda for 2 minutes, which is basically promoting their movie. And then the last 2 minutes, I'm asking questions that I want. But the killer is when you get somebody that talks slow and you ask one question and they'll give you like a 4 minute answer to the question. You just kind of, you know, you've had the experience, you kind of have to interrupt them in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the question.
Sure. Woody Allen will go on for 20 minutes because he's afraid you'll ask him some other stuff.
Oh, really? Well, what do you do with the 4 minutes, Bill?
Well, look.
You used to have that great bit.
Tell
everybody about that bit you did where it's like, I'm from your. I love that bit. I was talking to my
wife. I used to do
it
just for the junket companies and just for myself, but wherever the star was from, and I would never use this, it was just for me.
Right, well,
wherever
set the stage. You're walking into a room, and you're interviewing Julia Roberts, or you're interviewing Brad Pitt, whoever it is, and you got 4 minutes, and you sit down, and Bill's first thing out
before
of the box.
I did two things. One was if I was near the end of this junket process, which would be maybe 50 people, if I was like the 45th, and that happened often. Because people from these small towns get to leave earlier because they have to catch planes and go home, and I'm from New York. I sit down and I go, I just want to tell you I'm the halfway point. And they're like, oh, my God, there's like another 50 people. And I'm like, no, I'm kidding. I'm the last one. So they're relieved. And then I also would say, you're from Evanston, Illinois. And the star would go, yeah. And I would go, me too, born and bred. And it was wherever they were from.
You're from Peoria. Right. Yeah. Wherever they were.
Born and bred.
Right.
Harrison Ford almost called me out. Like, what street were you born on? And I was like, Oak? I just tried to make something
up. But most
of
these people, like, you would say, like, you grew up in Hong Kong, didn't you? And you go, me too. We went to the same high school. Like, Bill would do this on every.
Jackie Chan was like, Kowloon. I go, born and bred. He goes, yeah.
Great bit.
Yeah. No, what would I do? I mean, listen, I was so happy when I got magazine assignments where I would get 10 or 20 minutes alone, one-on-one. And basically, when you really step up, what happened to the Esquire thing is you get to meet them three or four times. You meet them at a bar. You go to a ball game with them. I mean, the publicists are trying to get everybody comfortable in the process. And sometimes the stars get too comfortable. Then they say stuff that they regret.
Well, that's, you know, if you're not doing TV like Bregoli's doing radio, the one nice thing is you get 10, sometimes you get 15, sometimes you even get 20 minutes. And although you have to share the radio time with other journalists, where if you do TV, it's one-on-one, at least it's you can let a conversation breathe. The other thing is it's just kind of like, you know, like meatball surgery, they used to call it in MASH. It's like meatball journalism interview. It's like quick in, out, you know? There's some new movies that are on demand that you probably don't, again, as I said at the top of this podcast, you probably will not recognize the titles, but they have big stars, some of them. And there's a movie coming out called Cop Car, just coming out on demand this week. It's with Kevin Bacon, and he plays a sheriff, and he's a corrupt sheriff, actually. And two, like, what are they, 10 years old, Bill?
Yeah, newcomers.
Two little
very
kids.
Young.
They're out playing around in the field, and Kevin Bacon is kind of burying a dead body, and the kids steal the cop car. Yeah. And that's basically the premise
of the movie.
They don't
see Kevin Bacon, and we don't know that for a couple minutes in the film, which is kind of cool.
Very, very early on.
But the cop car is sitting there. The keys are in it. They goad each other into – there's a long process of should we get in it, should we – when they find the keys, they're like, oh, let's go for a ride. And it turns into a noir thriller. And I found it completely original and really cool because it was so small. And I think Kevin Bacon, when he plays bad guys, is always great.
I don't know. You know, this. I thought the premise of this was really good, but I didn't like the kids. They were really annoying. And I thought that the end of the movie was so ambiguous that it almost kind of did ruin everything that came before it. I was like, well, this was a waste of my time. It was like, I'm watching this. What's going to happen? Is Kevin Bacon going to get the car back? And, you know... And there's, Cameron Mannheim's in it.
From The Practice, great actress.
Yeah,
we haven't seen
they
work
should have
much.
Really developed her role more than it would have been a little bit. I wasn't thrilled with the movie, but you liked it, and you haven't seen it, Bregoli.
No, I haven't.
All right, well, here's a movie
I just want to say to people, if they find the ending ambiguous, write me bill.mccuddy@yahoo.com and tell me, I don't think there's any ambiguity, so just send me a note. We'll tell Neil next week whether
he's
right or wrong.
Well, here's a movie that I really, really love that's on demand. Again, it's a title you probably never heard of. And this won a prize at the South by Southwest Festival. It's called Fort Tilden.
Oh, this is the breast movie, just for everyone who's listening.
Well, there is a scene in there where, if that's what you're interested in, there is a scene where four teenage girls sit around topless for about 10 minutes, but that's
not tasteful. It's tastefully done.
But that's not really why I like the movie. It's a comedy about two like Brooklyn hipster mid 20 something girls that decide they're going to take the day off and they're going to go to a beach called Fort Tilden, which is
to meet some guys.
Right,
with some guys.
They want to meet some guys. One of them is very interested in hooking up with one of the guys. But what I like about this movie, it's really sharp, witty screenplay by these writer-directors, Sarah Violet Bliss and Charles Rogers. I believe this is their theatrical debut. And the two leads, this girl, Bridie Elliott and Claire McNulty, they're just funny. I mean, they know how to work with this screenplay. And, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, the movie opens up. The movie had me the first 2 minutes. They're on a Brooklyn rooftop, and they're these two twins, and they're playing this really lame song on the guitar. And these two girls that I mentioned, played by Bridie Elliott and Claire McNulty, they're texting each other, making like bitchy, snarky comments. And you can read their text, and these texts are hilarious.
Yeah,
and
it is funny.
And that tone carries on through most of the film.
It's like if Lena Dunham was funnier. I mean, it's like the
it's like a funny version of Girls, you know,
and very real. I mean, I thought their relationship was great. I thought there's a hilarious seduction scene in the ocean between one of the girls and a guy who doesn't want to be there. And she's coming on to him, and she keeps saying, like, isn't this great? And he's like, no, I'm cold. I want to leave. It's like one of the funniest seduction scenes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And Fort Tilden gets a huge thumbs up from me.
Yeah, it's like it's dry wit, and I think the rest of the cast is very good, too. I mean, the one that plays, you know, they cop some drugs. That the guy who plays their ex-boyfriend drug dealer, he's really funny. The guys at the beach are really funny. The other girls that you mentioned, you led this movie off about the topless thing.
Right.
The other two girls
they're
in that
funny
topless scene. Everybody is really good in this movie. And I highly recommend this Fort Tilden thing. It's something that would probably fly way underneath your radar, but I highly recommend that one. The other new movie on demand this week, which I'm not – I am mixed on it. It's called 10,000 Saints. And excuse me, we don't have a cough button in here while I cough. See, and we thought you were the one that was sick, McCuddy.
Already I've made the others.
Look, already you've got me sick. it's a Jewish
if I can
neurosis.
Just do one thing on each show.
There you go. So 10,000 Saints. So this is set in the late 80s. And this one has Ethan Hawke in it. Kevin Bacon, Ethan Hawke, same generation of acting, don't you think, Broccoli?
Same jawline.
Yeah, and
Emil Hirsch is also in it.
Yeah,
quite good.
And you got this kid, and early on in the movie, Ethan Hawke plays his dad, and he finds out that he's impregnated another woman, so he splits, so he abandons the kid, and he has a best friend, this young kid, and we flash forward to like 10 years later, and he finds his father, who's living in the East Village in New York in the late 80s. And I think it captures New York and that East Village CBGB's grimy right before it became gentrified.
Alphabet City.
East Village, Lower East Side aspect of New York really well. But I don't know.
A lot on the plate here. There's a lot about drugs and about teen pregnancy and about abandoning parents. And we meet all the parents. Emily Mortimer is in it. It's just too many storylines.
There are way too many storylines going on in this thing. And, you know, if you have a storyline where you got a pregnant teen played by Hailee Steinfeld, and you've got a kid that's abandoned by his dad, and you got a best friend who I'm not really tipping much off. Let's just say some ill, something bad happens.
Yeah, early in the film.
Very early in the film. There are all these things. I should care more about what's going on in the movie when you have, and I really could care less. But the writing directing team here, Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini, they usually bore me. They did this movie with Kristen Wiig called Girl Most Likely. That bored me, and this bored me too. Now, this show is called Sitting Around Talking Movies, but we also sit around and talk about TV, and I wanted to know what you guys thought about the final episode of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Hmm.
Were you surprised that every correspondent that ever was on the show showed up? I tell you, I was struck by, like, I can't believe how many people were either launched on this show, like Colbert and Stephen Carell. It really was career makers for them. But also, even if it didn't launch them, that actually were correspondents on this show. Dave Attell was a correspondent on this
right.
show. Louis Black kind of came out of this show.
Louis Black's a good example of a guy that was around for a long time and nobody knew about him. And then, you know, back in Black and his whole Rage thing, absolutely made his career. He would be the first to admit it.
Yeah, and Ed Helms came out of this show, and Rob Corddry came out of this show.
Samantha Bee,
Littlefield.
You know, there's a lot of people. There were a lot of people that weren't on, though. You know, Frank DeCaro, and there were like 10.
You're right.
No, there were about 10 that there was a whole piece.
You're right about that, Frank DeCaro.
Yeah, he tweeted out, I guess my invitation was lost. Look, they had 55 minutes. They couldn't. A lot of women who I really apologize for not knowing. There was a piece about it in The Hollywood Reporter, and it was the 10 people you didn't see who weren't.
Oh, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, it's a good piece.
Frank is a good guy. I
forgot about that. He's got a very funny show
XM. He did gay-themed parody movie reviews on
The
Daily Show, which were very, very funny. And he has a show or he used to have a show on Sirius.
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah, he's that, I forgot, right, he wasn't there.
They still managed to get more people on that show than the Republican debate. It was a lot funnier.
That's true. That's true.
And, you know, your comment is so sanguine because, man, there's nothing. I mean, I wish the new guy all the best, but
Trevor Noah?
Yeah, but you know, I think for 16 years the way that Johnny Carson was the nightly editorial cartoon for another generation, The Daily Show was this nightly temperature that was taken, and to think of the whole Republican debate thing and how that's moving forward and not have Jon Stewart there to make fun of it. I'm going to miss that.
Yeah, well, after that Republican debate happened on Friday, was it Friday? Wasn't it, Pregoli? Was it Thursday or
it was
Friday?
Thursday.
I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, I was saying I really wish that Stewart was on Friday, or for my taste, I think Colbert, if the Colbert Report, and Colbert's coming back in September on CBS with a different kind of format, but if the old Colbert Report was on, he would have had a field day.
Well, he is having a field day with it. I mean, I don't know if you've been following any of the tweets, but he's trying to do something every day. And in fact, he said recently to a bunch of critics this week out in California when he was talking about what the format of the show is going to be. We're talking about Colbert now. He said if they think of something funny, he and his writers, at 2 in the afternoon, they may put it on CBS's website at 3 or 4 in the afternoon if they can get it together. He's been doing, because he's very aware of how much digital is going to impact the future of his show. So he did have some funny stuff about that topic. And so.
All right. So we'll go to. We'll go to the Late Show with Stephen Colbert website and look at some. I've seen some of his videos, not since the Republican debate, but some of them have been actually.
He said he lights a candle every day in prayer that Trump will be the nominee.
Well, here's my Colbert story.
And he hopes he hopes the candle doesn't get too close to Trump's hair.
Well, my Colbert story is that they have these things called the upfronts, which is once a year in New York. All the advertisers and the media buyers from around the country come in, and all the networks, not just the big networks like CBS, NBC, Fox, and ABC, but, you know, Comedy Central and Adult Swim and A&E, they all do this dog and pony show when they make presentations.
They throw parties.
Yeah. So I went – I'm a Colbert fanatic, and I saw Colbert at the CBS upfronts. And I said to him, are you really going to give up bits like Cheating Death with Stephen Colbert and Better Know a District and all these great stuff? Because he says he doesn't want to, you know, he wants to do a different kind of thing. He's giving up that faux Republican character. He goes, listen, man, he goes, I came up with all those bits and I'm going to come up with other great bits for the new show. I said, well, I hope they're great because the show meant a lot to me, the Colbert Report. I hope this new show was terrific. And he goes, brother, you and me both. So,
well, it may be like Conan, too, like a lot of intellectual property he can't bring over. But I think he will have, you know, everybody
but
in late nights had characters.
Because CBS is owned by Viacom and Comedy Central is owned by Viacom,
well, that's
which is
true.
Where the Colbert Report was. Yeah. And I never understood, you know, I understand the Letterman thing. When he left NBC and went to CBS, he had to change the name of some of the bits, even though they were essentially the same bits.
Right.
But he couldn't call them. Like Calvert DeForest was – what was his name on
Larry Bud Melman,
right.
Yeah.
It was the same
who they
actor.
Discovered at an open mic, by the way.
Oh, really? But he couldn't be called Larry Bud Melman, so he went to his real name, which was Calvert DeForest.
Right.
You know, Bill Murray is McCuddy brought up to me that he's going to be appearing in the Ghostbusters reboot, which is all women are now playing.
This is interesting to me because for years Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd had been trying to get Murray into a third Ghostbusters, and Murray wisely kept saying, "You know what? No, it's not going to be funny. We're older. It's not going to work." And I guess Aykroyd had written something that then Murray just said, no, I'm not doing it. And so this is really kind of a big deal, I think, that he's giving his almost endorsement to the all-female version of Ghostbusters.
So you think that Aykroyd and,
The late Harold Ramis now.
Well, do you think that late Harold Ramis would have been steamed and
I think Ackroyd pissed off.
Basically.
I think that rumbling in his grave is him rolling over.
Well, is Ackroyd pissed off?
I haven't heard about Ackroyd. Ackroyd hasn't said anything yet that I'm aware of. But, you know, he may be angling for his own little cameo. Who knows?
So what movie that came out this summer are you most looking forward to, McCuddy and Bregoli, coming out on demand? You know, usually the window is if it goes to on demand and DVD, probably about 3 months, 4 months after it comes out, you know, in theaters. So what are you looking for?
Although that window, as we talked about last week, is getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, I'm glad it's getting shorter.
Some things are day and date. Some things are opening the same time.
I'm looking forward for the Woody Allen movie to come out on demand. Even though it wasn't the
Irrational
most
Man.
Irrational Man. Even though it wasn't the most original thing, he's kind of ripping off himself. I don't mind if a director rips off himself. It's kind of like I'm ripping off, if you're Woody Allen, he's ripping off Crimes and Misdemeanors and a little bit of Match Point, you know. But
and he holds up well on a smaller screen.
Yeah,
I think he does.
It's not like seeing a comic book superhero movie on a big screen. You could watch that easily on demand. So that should be on demand, I'd say, within a couple of months.
I agree with that. I'm looking forward to a Peter Bogdanovich documentary that talks about the rise and fall of his career and Dorothy Stratton, the young girl he fell in love with that was killed by a creepy guy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. You know, the thing with him, there's this book that's written. It's called Easy Riders and
Raging Bulls.
Raging Bulls.
Yeah. Peter Biskin.
Peter Biskin.
Yeah, it's a great book. And
Rolling
it talks
Stone
about,
reporter.
If you look at Peter Bogdanovich, I mean, he started out as a film critic, which is, you know, us being film critics, it's kind of interesting. And he was handed the reins to direct The Last Picture Show, which is like a great classic movie. And then he followed that up with Paper Moon, another black and white classic movie. It was also
even Nickelodeon was kind of cool. And
I hated Nickelodeon.
Well, but it's to be admired for what it did.
Well, anyway, if you look at those first two black and white films that he did, which are really great, and I don't think the guy made a decent movie since then, and what they say it was that his it was either girlfriend or wife at the time, she was really the force behind
Polly Platt you're talking about. She was the production designer.
Yeah, and she was also helping with the editing, and she was It's almost like that Hitchcock movie where it was like Hitchcock's. It was a time when women's rights were not sadly what they are. You know, today they still have a ways to go, but you know, Hitchcock's wife was really kind of like pulling a lot of the strings and making a lot of the calls. And So yeah, apparently once Bogdanovich went head over heels for Sybil Shepherd and left this woman, all the movies. You know, you saw that Bogdanovich really didn't have the chops to make movies.
But man, he was the king. He was the big.
Short window.
He was the short window, man. There's some great Dick Cavett interviews with him online where he just thinks he's the next Orson Welles.
Oh, he's so pretentious.
And then next he wasn't. And he's kind of come this many years later back around. And I hope that he has a new movie coming out also on demand that we're going to review next week. We should also talk about next week, we're going to talk about Straight Outta Compton and a lot of hip-hop movies, which
that's true.
Is a fun category and a cool One of the people who was on the show today picked 8 Mile. If you only know 8 Mile for sort of that world, there's a lot of cool other movies in that category.
I'll leave you by telling you this Peter Bogdanovich story. When Nickelodeon came out, I was with College Press. I was doing what Bregoli's doing, the radio thing, except for college. And they had a screening of Nickelodeon in the old Columbia Pictures building, which is now the Coca-Cola building. It's
right,
on 7-Eleven Fifth Avenue. And so they show this movie, which I thought was just, like, abysmal, unfunny. And then Bogdanovich comes out to maybe, like, you know, 17 or 18 College Press people, and he's doing a Q&A. He's not really letting anybody ask any questions. He's just pontificating and speaking about how great of a director he is. And he goes, you know, there's something funny with this Nickelodeon. When I came up with this of watching Burt Reynolds walk around with a bucket on his foot, I just thought that was hilarious. This is what Bogdanovich said, and I didn't think it was funny. And he kept, as you said, McCuddy, he kept dropping Orson Welles' name every 3 minutes. And he's like, well, Orson this and Orson that. And
well, they were actually friends.
Yeah, well, they were. I mean, Orson Welles is long gone. But I don't know. I found the guy to be really full of himself. But, you know, two great movies. He has a new movie coming out, which we'll also talk about next week. And you know, it's with an A-list cast. So we'll see next week how Peter Bogdanovich's directorial abilities have been since he has a new movie coming out. And I'm going to wrap this up. That's about it. You're listening to the podcast Sitting Around Talking Movies. And as McCuddy said, we'll talk about Straight Outta Compton next week. We'll talk about the new Peter Bogdanovich movie. And we'll talk about whatever else is going on movie-wise and entertainment-wise in the news. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.